Hello, respective viewers. It's George from Ireland. So I recently read this Sean South of Gary Owen by Des Fogarty. Sean South, someone I've known about since I was 18. And of course, there's that very widely recognized Republican ballad that was published only about 9 days after his death. So for those who don't know, Sean South was a terrorist in the Irish Republican Army who got himself shot dead trying to attack the police in Northern Ireland on New Year's Day 1957. So getting himself killed was his major achievement. Anyway, so I bought this, and it's an adequate book by Des Fogarty. It's written with reasonable lucidity, a few mistakes with the punctuation marks. The author's not a highly educated person, by his own acknowledgement. He's a Limerick man. So Limerick is a fairly major city in the Republic of Ireland. We'd be like the third biggest city in the Republic, maybe the sort of fourth in the whole of Ireland. So it's telling us more about the background of someone whose name is very well known. John South, give him his proper name. How he was born in Limerick, in a working class family. I think it's 1928, finished his leaving certificate. Gives a lot of background about his family. But it doesn't really call out for him his anti-Semitism. But this guy was a rabid anti-Semite, and it was just after the Holocaust, making it all the more shocking. And it quotes word for word his letters to local newspapers when John South said there was this Judeo-Masonic conspiracy in Hollywood to corrupt Irish minds with their filth and stuff like that. And he thought these were immoral films promoting fornication and so on. It's not a direct quotation. So he was one for crackpot conspiracy theories. And the author doesn't actually say how horrific that was. It just lets the word speak for themselves. There's a bit of background on the city of Limerick. So some quite good scene setting. And one of the fascinating things that came out of this is that he was sometimes a classmate, John South, of Frank McCourt, that very well-known Limerick memorist who penned Angela's Ashes and Tears and so on, which was quite contentious in Limerick. Some people felt that he besmirched the reputation of the city. So he was one of Limerick's best-known figures in the late 20th century, moved to the United States, as a young man, about 1946, and he died there. But his book caused quite a stir. And there are photos of them together. So South was brought up a Catholic, like about 95% of people in Limerick. There he is. On his first communion, so there he is, about age 7, a cute little boy. It was difficult not to feel fond of him. Obviously, terrible considering how he turned out, what he tried to do other people, and then I have to feel sorry for him getting killed at quite a young age. I mean, it was his own stupid fault because the evil he was getting up to. But in some ways, you don't really get under his skin. His persona, we know his beliefs, his fixations. He was someone who was zealous. Notable for his fanaticism, for his unwavering and dangerous belief in his own rectitude when it came to the most ultramontane, obsessive version of Catholicism, to his Puritanism. Now, his Irish language enthusiasm is one of the few praiseworthy things about him. Knowledge is usually better than ignorance, and he certainly wanted to evangelize for that, even though he'd also from a Gaelic family. Perhaps I should call it Gaelic, because, of course, it's not the original language of Ireland. And obviously hasn't been the major language of Ireland for some time. Anyway, how his father died when he was very little, I hadn't realized that. His uncle, W.J. South, ran a pub known as W.J. South in Limerick. It's on O'Connell Avenue for many years. I'm not quite sure if it's still there. Last time I visited Limerick was just before coronavirus. I was involved in Boy Scouts, involved in the FCA as in local defense force in Irish. Seems to be a rather tall chap. We don't get to see what the sound of his voice was. He was somebody of seemingly a boundless energy. So a man of many enthusiasms, as part of the honor guard for Sean T. O'Kelly when he unveiled a monument at Solihull Beg, which started the first troubles in 1919, January 1919, same day that Doyle Aram met the Mansion House Dublin. Not a memorial to the two Irishmen who gave their lives for peace, justice, and freedom that day, the two Royal Irish Constabulary officers, unfortunately a memorial to the perpetrators of those murders. But there we go. So he was in the FCA as a sort of part-time army reserve. He got taken the leaving certificate, as in the school leaving examination. And these days, about 55% of people in the Republic of Ireland attend university, one of the highest university attendance rates in the world. But back then, it was about 2% when he left school. And I know minority people would have got the leaving certificate. So he was no slouch intellectually. He was a dreadful poet. and I'm going to have to inflict a bit of this on you. Although he tried to speak Irish as much as possible, he penned his poesy in English. This one, it doesn't appear to have a title. It's about a trip to St. Thomas's Island on the Shannon, okay, near Limerick. And it goes a bit like this. 'Twas a morning in May, we went out for the day. Five girls, boys three, composed the party. Cupid thought it wise to make handsome all the boys, but oh, for the girls, the best was their curls. The weather early it was grand, the girl Thomas's Island. The prospects were fine for a very nice time. But we should have remembered that adage we all had heard, that whatever man proposes, the good God it disposes. And so it goes on. So woeful. But he was fairly handy with his pencil. So a good sketch artist, was a member of the Legion of Mary, which is sort of a Catholic lay organization, had a long tousled hair, surprising considering himself a soldier. So wasn't your average Catholic, but his devotion to the faith was really staggering. And for him, that really led to nationalism. So was a average constitutional nationalist, but became a fervent Republican in the late 1940s. So, and was really trying to promote the Irish language amongst children. And that's him getting some boys to pledge to speak Irish as much as possible. So that's the admiral aspect of him. Here's Moira de Power, who was his girlfriend. He almost certainly died a virgin, because I'm sure he'd been very much against fornication. He idolized Porrick Pierce and John South. Let's call the blighter by his proper name, John, not Sean, never changed by a deed poll. He wrote to some Irish genealogy office, and much to his chagrin, discovered that the name came from Wiltshire, as in England. So indubitably had English stock, which is not to say he wasn't Irish. It might have been just a tiny fraction, but he's a little bit English. So maybe we should just call him English. I think it was even his grandfather, as the book suggests, doesn't make that clear, whether his grandfather came from North East England to Wexford, and obviously the next generation moving to Limerick. So as people call him Irish all the time, if he's a quarter of English, let's redress the balance, and I'll call him English enough times now, and that'll be more accurate, because it won't be at close to a quarter of the reference of ever calling him Irish. Anyway, so, and even when he was in the IRA, supposedly a clandestine organization, they were imbecilic enough to take lots of photos of themselves. And here we are. And another thing I discovered is they purchased surplus British Army uniforms from Army surplus shops in the Republic of Ireland. And he was actually wearing parts of British Army uniform when he got killed at Brookborough, County Fermanagh. So therefore, they were all sanctimonious about the Geneva Convention. He was in breach of the Geneva Convention when he did that, and so on. And here they are with some IRA men training in County Clare, just north of Limerick. So why, if you're in a secret organization, would you take photos of yourself? I mean, it just really is imbecilic. So there are many more photos than I knew. I mean, up until now, I knew about from Tim Pat Coogan's book, and saying, well, one of the few photos I'm doing the rounds is one of him with FCA uniform. So he hated people telling smutty jokes and things like that. He wasn't particularly involved in the Gaelic Athletic Association, perhaps surprisingly. So, he never left Ireland in his life. What's one of the other notable things about him? He'd left the FCA when he joined the Irish Republican Army because he believed, you know, he wasn't going to be in breach of his oath, because he'd sworn before God whilst in the FCA not to be any subversive organization and not to use his training for that, for any illegal activities. But of course, I mean, perhaps he could have engaged him to casuistry and say what the IRA doing is not unlawful, but in fact it's the legitimate Army of Ireland, and so on. So he did give a lot of his time free. There's no questioning his sincerity, but that's not to say he was good. Evil people can be perfectly sincere. One thing it misses out in the scene setting is how this is just after the Second World War, and there have been hundreds of Limerick men who would have volunteered for the British Army, and indeed the Royal Navy, the Royal Air Force, in the Second World War. And so that would have been quite a big influence in Limerick just after the war. Obviously, some of the served in the United States military or the military of various Commonwealth countries. So he doesn't state that. Even in the 1950s, when this border campaign kicked off, there were still a few Limerick men who were not joining the Irish Army, going to join the British Army. And that was not an unusual thing to do until the 1970s, until the more modern troubles began. And one thing about banging on about how the Catholic minority in the Northern Ireland were supposedly so shabbily treated. You get this statement from the IRA here in 1956, when they began Operation Harvest, as in their failed border campaign, which lasted in 1962. And there's nothing about that. They don't say the Catholic minority don't get housing, you know, council housing on the basis of need. They don't say, oh, the discrimination in employment. They don't say anything like that. So that wasn't an issue, as in it wasn't even that bad, or that only householders get the vote, and therefore the Catholic minority have proportionally fewer votes than they should for Stormont or local councils. So it was all based on sort of Republican mythology, their reason to try and overthrow democracy in Northern Ireland. So this book is strong in parts, curate said, good in parts, very sketchy, rather clumsy and confused in other bits. So he obviously had sources, spoke to people who knew him. It was written almost 20 years ago, when some of the perpetrators of those IRA crimes in the 1950s were still alive. And so he had people who had first-hand knowledge told him what it was like. Hear it almost from the horse's mouth. The Brookborough raid, that Brookborough Royal Ulster Constabulary barracks, and how that was a complete debacle from an IRA point of view. And this chap was actually in the Irish Army, the Des Fogarty, for a while. And then even he, in this hagiography, he enumerates the cock-ups. And Sean South, despite the thing, he was the leader. I think he was actually second in command. It was Sean Garland who was in charge, wasn't it? It says there were various mistakes because, let me see, the bombs that they had didn't go off, and they had no medical kit, and their medic had left the unit sometime earlier. I can't think what else they did which went wrong. They had no idea the layout of the town. Their truck driver didn't know how to drive that model of truck. It was a dump truck in the accident. It was tipping it back, and they're almost falling out and things like that, and. I mean, their success as that IRA unit is they did operate in Northern Ireland undetected for a few days, inflicting no damage on the United Kingdom whatsoever. They managed to get it back over the border, despite four of the wounded men being with them. They left Sean South behind, stone dead. His Fergal O'Hanlon, his co-conspirator, dying. And they didn't actually drop any of their arms. So there he is, looking very boyish, youthful, innocent. I mean, I know it sounds silly, but comes across as a pleasant person. It's a pity that he got himself killed. But, you know, a police officer, someone's trying to murder you, what are you going to do? You've got to fire in self-defense. And then he was shot dead. I know there's that lie by Stephen Behan, who wrote the song about the Patriot game. My name is O'Hanlon, I've just turned 16. No, he was 20 when he was killed. And that photo is, maybe it was a few years before he was actually killed, looked unusually baby-faced. So there we go. So I would like to go and make videos of some sites more relevant to them, like Henry Street, where Sean South grew up. And Sean South, he wasn't actually from Garry, and is from a different part of Limerick City. But when he died, there was an enormous outpouring of grief. And for people, it was redolent of the first Troubles of 1919 to 21 period. And even people in Fine Gael often mourned him and so on, had a huge funeral procession through Dublin and indeed through Limerick when he got back there and so on. And so buried in the Republican prot in is it Mount St. Lawrence Cemetery in Limerick, to which I have been. But the IRA didn't actually capitalize on that and get lots more volunteers for themselves. Because remember, I knew an Englishman who was in Trinity College Dublin around this time, and everyone assumed that was over, those troubles. Okay, a bit of kerfuffle in 1957, but it almost failed. And there they are marching through the main street in the whole of Ireland, the IRA, with his funeral casket, O'Connell Street in Dublin, formerly Sackville Street, past the Rotunda Hospital and the Parnell Monument. So tens of thousands of people attended, most of the population of Limerick. So then he was buried there, age 28. So just very, very well known. I'd love to read the Limerick Leader for then and see what the coverage was, and the mayor of Limerick greeting the casket and things like that. So that book, it's a bit of a disappointment. It's not terrible. It's somewhat informative. It's perhaps too brief. It misses out some details. It does tell you a lot about, I suppose, the functioning IRA, the exact weapons they had, where they hid out and things like that. So not terribly recommended. It was rather overpriced, I've got to say. Anyway, thank you for watching my video. So make sure you subscribe on Patreon. Toodaloo.